Hi, I'm Barry Ritholtz, and this is Light at the End of the Tunnel. About a year ago, on March 11, 2020, the WHO declared COVID-19 to be a global pandemic. That night, the NBA canceled a game and then canceled the entire season. Soon after, every other sports league followed. The market's sell-off accelerated. Back in November 2020, I made this one shocking observation. Assuming that we reopened around June 2021, and given that the lockdown had begun in March of 2020, we were exactly at the halfway point. My best guesstimate for herd immunity and reopening and all these other factors of when life might return to normal, when we'd have maskless social interactions, public events, getting back to work, that June 21 date made, almost 6 months ago, that looks even better today. If June is our end date, then today we're about the 75% mark, meaning we are three quarters through this pandemic and we can see the light at the end of the tunnel. Let's consider why this is so and what the next 6 months might look like. Starting with vaccines, perhaps the biggest difference between this White House and its immediate predecessor, aside from less tweeting and gaslighting, has been the move away from a laissez-faire approach to managing the pandemic and towards a top-down, federal government-coordinated, managed, hands-on approach. This is the most significant distinction between 46 and 45. Well, that and 535,000 dead Americans, of which, depending on which study you look at, anywhere between 30, 40, 50, or 60% were probably avoidable if only we had better leadership that took the science more seriously. The new administration invoked the Defense Production Act to bolster vaccine production, boost the availability of at-home and point-of-care virus tests, increase the supply of critical shortages in PPE, those are all the personal protective equipment that doctors normally have full access to and now the public needs, things like masks and shields and gloves. The net result of the new administration activities, vaccination rates have increased significantly. This past weekend, we exceeded 3 million vaccinations a day. We're averaging well over 2 million vaccinations over the past week. Anyone who wants a vaccine will be able to get one by sometime in May 2020. And as someone who is the chairman of a firm, we are letting our staff and suppliers and customers know, don't plan on showing up in our office without having had a vaccine. Imagine if in 1940, the President of the United States announced, the free market is the best way to deal with Nazis. That's just a ridiculous approach. You can't have states competing for masks with each other. They're just going to drive the price up. And that's literally what happens. A lot of the mistakes that were made over last year are part of the reason why 2020 saw over 500,000 excess deaths in the United States. At least that's according to the CDC. What's the lesson for the future? Hey, any government who comes in without a whole lot of experience or who doesn't believe in government, they're not going to be especially competent since they insist government can't accomplish very much. It is a failure of imagination and a lack of understanding of history. Vaccinations. Well, here's some good news. My wife and I went to New York City's Javits Center last week to get vaccinated. Almost 9,000 people a day are getting processed there. They briefly went to 24 hours a day, but they ran out of Johnson & Johnson. They're doing Pfizer during the day, Johnson & Johnson at night. As soon as they get their new supply of J&J, they're going to reopen 24 hours. The goal is to hit 25,000 daily vaccinations. And if they could do that, they may even open the other half of the Javits Center and try and double that number. The interesting thing is it was run with military precision, probably because it was mostly uniformed Army personnel managing it. You arrive at the checkpoint, you show your ID, your appointment information, your medical documentation. They move you to the next phase. Eventually, you get a person who asks you a run of questions, I'm going to guess they were drafted by Pfizer's attorneys, but they're looking at your medical history, allergies, reactions to vaccines or shots or whatever, before they move you on to a smaller line, and eventually you come to a two-person vaccination station. My wife and I sat down, answered a few more questions. We each got a shot. Then you go to the waiting room where you wait for 15 minutes in case of a reaction. I was in and out of the Javits Center in 90 minutes. I've heard people do drive-through at places like Jones Beach, where they're in and out in 5 minutes. Aqueduct, the bigger places, also 45 minutes. Some of the smaller locations, Northwell Health in the city, my sister-in-law was in and out in 10 minutes. I know people who went to Stony Brook, also in and out in 10 minutes. You're more likely to get an appointment because they have so many more appointments, but plan on it taking a little longer. You know, we just crossed 100 million vaccinations given to Americans worldwide. We're coming up on 350 million doses. These are big numbers, and they're reasons for optimism. COVID rescue plan and stimulus. Look, the third CARES Act is a $1.9 trillion rescue plan. This sent $350 billion to states and municipalities. That funding is helping with the vaccination process. You can't simply say to the states, vaccinate $300 million and go find the money yourself. Hey, it's really expensive. So that's a huge part of the COVID plan. The rest of the cash is an extension of unemployment insurance. $1,400 checks go out to about 85% of Americans. And one of the most significant aspects of the third CARES Act is the expanded tax credit for children. This is going to have a huge, huge impact and for quite a while. I expect this to be a boost to the economy and a lifeline for many people. Not only will it push through to food, rent, healthcare, technology, home improvement, it'll most importantly help with employment, and that's very significant. Look, we've discussed this a number of times. I don't see any real threats from inflation. Yeah, we'll see some price increases. They're likely to be transitory. Remember, you look at what took place February, March, April, May last year, huge decrease in prices as the pandemic froze the economy. So on a year-over-year basis, you're going to see some inflation. It's a little misleading because it's coming off of those low levels. What we really want to see is not just spot shortages, not just temporary price increases, but if we're going to look for signs of inflation, you want to see broad and sustained and prolonged rises in prices. I think we're still in a deflationary environment and have been for decades, and that's why, other than the occasional spasm of inflation, I'm not worried. In fact, the Fed continues to ensure everybody the Fed funds rates will stay low until 2023. They have many, many tools on hand to fight inflation. I don't think it's going to be a big issue. Reopening the economy. Let's assume I'm correct about all or most of the above. Well, some form of herd immunity should appear sometime this summer. You know, you want to say June or July, I'm not going to argue with you. By then, we'll have over 100 million Americans who have had COVID. Be aware that the official numbers are somewhat understating it, not because of anything nefarious, but it's because we are learning that so many people didn't even know they had COVID. They were asymptomatic, no signs of the disease, but they spread it. And it could be three or four times. I'm a little skeptical of the 10 or 20x. That seems very aggressive. But certainly, it's not a stretch to say three to four times as many people who officially have had COVID in the U.S. actually had COVID. So it could be, you know, another 100 million Americans will have had COVID. We already have 100 million shots in the arms. By May or June, we should have 150 to 200 million people who have had both shots. By then, figured June, we will have close to 75% of Americans with antibodies in their bloodstream. So that's a huge, huge change. And it gets us to the point where the process of normalization starts in earnest. So how are we going to experience reopening? There's a ton of pent-up demand, and as people's fear levels subside, they're going to do what they used to do. We'll start by gathering in groups to socialize. First, it's your immediate and then extended family, and then people at work, and then friends. Not long after that, we start going out to restaurants. Maybe some people will go shopping in retail stores. And soon after that, bars, entertainment like concerts and plays and shows. Maybe we'll go to museums. And soon after that, we'll see the return of business travel, including conferences. No one will hesitate to get on a plane or travel once we have enough people vaccinated. So as we return to normal, there'll be some changes. Hey, the Monday to Friday 9-to-5 routine certainly is going to be in danger. Full disclosure, I don't know, about 10 years ago, I started working from home on summer Fridays from Memorial Day to Labor Day. Just the city is empty. There's no reason to go in on a Friday in the middle of the summer. And then, I don't know, a couple of years ago, that extended to year-round. I work from home on Fridays and don't go into the city. And the takeaway from the pandemic work-from-home experience has been you don't need to be in the office every single day. And it's not just the founder and chairman of the firm. I think many people will find they don't need to go in. We've seen huge, huge productivity gains. The fears of work from home leading to people to slack off didn't happen. If anything, people worked longer hours and were more productive because there's no difference between home or office. It's the same thing. So the Monday to Friday 9-to-5 routine is probably ancient history. We're all going to have to learn to adapt. Offices and managers and executives, they're going to need to figure this out. It's going to make technology even bigger in our lives. And while there'll be a bit of a reset, there's certainly no going back to the way it was pre-pandemic. What about the stock market? Well, I haven't bought into the argument that this bull market is ending anytime soon. Sure, there's plenty of signs of froth wherever you look. I have a hard time wrapping my head around the non-fungible tokens. Not the concept, but some of these prices just seem eye-popping. But the bottom line is this is a viable secular bull market with many parts of the economy working. Once the parts of the economy that are not working, and that's everything from travel to entertainment to hospitality to retail, go down the list, all the areas that are not working, this economy is going to boom. So what you've been seeing with pullbacks in the tech sector and in NASDAQ, it looks less like a top. It feels more like a sector rotation. You know, you're seeing the finance sector do well. Money is rotating into energy. That's not what happens at the end of a bull market. That's what happens at the end of a recession when the economy comes out of its contraction and people start to, you know, go back to normal. And that's a traditional recession, not an externality like a pandemic. So I think the market's pricing in a pretty big economic boom caused by reopening. Maybe it's a bigger boom than people realize. And that's why this is less of a top and more of energy, finance, and cyclicals feeling the love, which is what you would expect at the end of a recession, start of an expansion. You should expect volatility. That's to say the least. Nothing goes up or down in a straight line. Just because we've had a huge run-up doesn't mean the market has to crash. It can work off some of the excesses by going sideways for a couple of quarters or by having earnings catch up to price. That's happened very often. Markets that look expensive suddenly look reasonable when earnings increase. Remember that bull markets don't die of old age. They're usually killed by policy mistakes, sometimes by the president and Congress, but most often by the Federal Reserve. And finally, life. I hope you've used your time at home well, that you've worked on whatever it is that interests you, that you've become better, smarter, healthier, happier, more present, more informed, and more appreciative of just how insane a period we've all lived through. Carpe diem. Seize the day. You still have a few more months of remote work. Try and take full advantage of it. For more from me, check out The Big Picture at ritholtz.com.